Hello and welcome once again to the CGW Radio Podcast. This is the podcast for September 26, 2006. We are back. We took a week off last week because we were under extreme duress deadline for getting the last CGW out the door, but it is out the door. We are still CGW Radio for now. We are not GFW Radio, but at some point we're going to have to make that painful switch.
This is like an airport, though.
GFW, yeah.
We got to embrace it at this point.
Yeah. At some point we do. But for right now, today, we are the CGW Radio Podcast. God damn it. And with me today are the CGW editors, which are as follows.
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
And Sean Malloy.
Welcome, gentlemen. Once again, we've been scattered across the four corners of the earth for a while, but we're all back. It's good to see y'all. Sean is back from Japan. Sean Elliott, mm-hmm. That is. I have to say, I have to use last names.
Jet lagged and sick, but ready to talk about some Half-Life 2 Survivor Arcade.
Excellent. Ooh. Woot. Yeah, and you
what
gotta,
a teaser.
We can't show that card you got on the air, but we need to talk about it because it's really odd what you got here.
You guys can pass this around. Yeah, well, basically, what's going around now is a memory card for the game, for the arcade game. So when you go in and play it, like if you want to do a single-player game, which is basically Half-Life 2 as we know it, but not as we know it, and you get the card for like 200 yen, and then that will allow you to come back and you know, resume play just as if you had been doing it from a home PC.
And basically, wait, you can resume play from where you were?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So, So say if you get halfway through, you know, whatever, Nova Prospect and a couple games, and you come back, then you come back the next day with some more money and finish it, you know.
I think I remember, like, didn't Sega use one of these cards in their arcade games? For, like,
yeah,
was it F-Zero or something?
Yeah, tons of arcade games there, including, I think, like, the Mario Kart racing and whatnot, have these cards, these memory cards for them. At first I thought I was buying a card to just give me credits to play it, and then it was only after it started asking me for more money that I realized that I kind of screwed up. Got myself a souvenir, but so the skinny on this game is it's basically Half-Life 2, but instead of a mouse and keyboard, and you know, Japanese are traditionally, you know, FPS phobic, you've got 2 foot pedals, one for crouch, one for jump. Your left hand control stick is the left, right, up, down, you know, back, forward, left and right movement, or you know, WASD. And then your right stick is like a hand controller that then becomes your mouse, and it's got a scroll wheel on it and a trigger, like it was a flight thing. And then you use the two together. So, you know, move your left hand forward to move forward and then look around with this stick as if it were a mouse pad. And it's not very, it's pretty intuitive. I mean, you can figure out as soon as you sit down and start playing and you're just sitting there like jumping with one thing and, you know, looking around. But it's definitely not as accurate or as precise.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing about this game is hilarious is that, of course, they're abbreviating it by taking out, you know, they're taking out, you're not going to be in the arcade and wandering through the very first section of the game and getting off the trains and meeting Barney in the room and finding out that he's, you know, disguised as a Combine guy. So it just immediately cuts to right after that and gives you a crowbar and a gun. But then it's the same game. But then what they do is because they have no faith in their audience's ability to negotiate these environments or figure out, okay, that's a dead end. I shouldn't sit here for another hour and beat this wall with the crowbar. I should probably go down that hall. And if that door is open, I probably should go in there. So every step of the way, there's a giant illuminated arrow telling you where to go, or if there's a crate telling you to beat on this crate, or if there's an enemy shooting at you in the face, a big highlight and an arrow pointing at him, saying like, this dude right here, you do not want to be this guy's friend, shoot him. So I mean, it's like Time Crisis, like, and then a helicopter comes down, and you know, this is all familiar experience to us. We know where the helicopters come in Half-Life, and you definitely know it's like a crap your pants moment and you get some cover. But here it's reminding you yet again that big thing flying and shooting however many rounds a second at you is to be shot at.
So the game, the game's already a Disneyland ride to start with. It's basically like pointing you what to do.
Yeah, so if you take out all of the stuff that Valve is known for is in terms of like creating the Disneyland ride and then masking it, you know, like going in and trying to make it so it seems that your eye movement's directed by very organic things, by composition and things like that, rather than, and so taking all that work away and just putting in the arrows and showing here is the Disneyland ride that's always been there. The game loses a whole lot because of it.
But I mean, people are sitting there, I mean, you're in public playing at an arcade and are you paying by the minute or no?
No, you pay by, I think what happens is you get a certain amount, you know, because obviously you can get health in the game and stuff the same way you're used to. And I never died. It was just so easy for me. But, I mean, mm-hmm. I know the game, you know, the back of my hand. But after I played a certain number of levels, then it was like time for more money, you know.
Okay.
So after I was like, I got through the canals, it wanted me to put more money in to keep uh-huh. playing. Which was interesting. And then it's got a big multiplayer component to it. And this is interesting because all the they created new character models. So there's like a Gordon, and then there's like a female Gordon too, and she's in her armor. And so it's not Alex or anything. It's like a big with big, you know, big breasts, but the half suit
but with Gordon's face.
No, but it's like
big anime eyes.
Yeah, it's like if he had a sister. Then so all the characters get female versions too.
She have a beard too.
The combine assassins, the guys with the one eye, the white outfits. There's female versions of them. There's female versions of the police. There's all these other random ones that they made, guys with these big backpacks, and they all have like a female version too. And then you run around and play deathmatch in these linked units through that. And the surprising thing was a lot of people were actually playing this game. I thought there you'd go and it's going to just because like they're 360. You go in all the game stores I went to there, they had these big kiosks out front and people gather around in public to play them. But there's always the 360 one. It had some brand new game I'd never even heard of. It's not out here. And no one would touch it. It was always, every single store was vacant. Whereas all the PlayStation 2 games, for some, the cheesiest looking tennis game or something came out. Uh-huh. And there'd be like 20 people playing that thing.
That's brutal.
So it surprised me that they were willing to play Half-Life 2 Survivor in the arcade when there are all these other sort of Japan native games around that, that probably made more sense to a lot of people there. And they really,
is it general just an Xbox phobia kind of thing or?
I don't know. But think of it too. I mean, the first person shooter the closest analog there is the Kingsfield games, which are like dungeon crawl. It's like, imagine if you took Oblivion and you made it 1,000 times slower.
Right.
And I remember playing Kingsfield.
Is that possible?
It is. Yeah. Go rent yourself a Kingsfield game. Yeah. You can do one. It's real time, but you do one sword slash every 2 minutes or something, for it. And you better hope it
PS1.
Hits. Yeah. The PS1 stuff. So
do we know Valve made any part of this, or is they like just kind of hand it over to a third party to add all this stuff?
I don't know. I think Taito publishes it, and I'm guessing it was them, because I can't imagine Valve being, of all the places that they're making money and they can and do make money, that just doesn't seem like a big place where they're like, you know, this is going to be a really wise investment on our part. And I can't imagine them wanting to do that kind of violence to their own game just so someone else will get it.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I can imagine them wanting to test it themselves and everything. So I'm just guessing they gave it, made some agreement and said, hey, go ahead. At the worst, this is just, you know, introduce some characters and stuff to this new market.
Right.
I'll be in this weird context. But it is funny because the other games there in the same arcade, they had this a dog walking simulator. Dogs are all the rage there. Real small. Like, you know, Nintendog stuff?
Yep.
It's like when you go there, it makes sense because everyone has those kind of dogs that are from the game. Mm-hmm. And you can actually rent dogs. Like, you go out and there's this dog store and it's like, we rent dog, you know, and it's like dog rental and fun. And so you get in the line and there's all these people and they show you, you know, here's a bag, here are the bags to pick up its poo. And this is what you do. And I was watching through the window. All the families are getting them. And then you get the dog and you rent it for a couple hours and just walk around.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. But so anyway, and so that theme, they got the dog. I mean, a dog is just huge there. So they get this game and it's basically a treadmill for you to walk on and you hold a leash. And what's happening is that you pick all the different dog breeds that you want to walk, you know, whatever. So we pick this poodle. And we're going to go walk it. And you're on this treadmill. Basically, you're trying to steer it because it wants to go pee places where it shouldn't. It wants to chase cats. Uh-huh. It wants to, you know, chase mailman and whatever. But so you're trying to struggle to keep this thing going in a
certain path. So you're holding on to like a...
onto a leash.
A controller sort of?
A leash that's attached to a controller, that can exert some kind of resistance. And then the treadmill, which applies increasing resistance. You have to make, instead of running on its own and having you run to keep up with it, you have to move it. And it becomes, and it becomes even more and more difficult to move. So it's the equivalent of like, you know, like pushing a car up a hill or something.
Mm-hmm. Jeez, that sounds fun.
Right. Wow. So I'm walking this freaking poodle.
In a gym.
Check this out.
No.
So this poodle, I'm walking it and all of a sudden, and the thing can't weigh more than like 10 cents, right? And all of a sudden it's like, like you've got a horse. It's like you got a Clydesdale on the end of this thing. And I mean, no, you're seriously like pulling us all. I'm like, I've done tug of war and used less energy than to keep this 10 cent poodle from like taking a piss on the truck. But anyway, that was pretty funny.
You have to pick up virtual poo as well or something? Or?
You don't have to do that, but I mean, I don't know why not.
Yeah, that'd be an excellent gameplay feature.
Another sequel. Another, what else?
Did you do the pooper scooper thing?
I didn't see a single in their game stores. They don't have PC games with them that I've been able to find. Except I did find a big banner for Rise of Legends at one store.
Interesting.
It was like the main thing, and it was like a multi-platform store, but I never found where the games are at. And then I did see a PC store, and all the PCs are very, very small boxes, in part because of the living conditions there.
Right,
you know,
right.
You just
right.
don't have much real estate, and you don't want to have these mega water-cooled towers that we've got. So, I don't know. I wonder, I mean, everyone always asks, what's the deal? Why, you know, why is PC gaming just so non-existent, so to speak, over there? And you can even tell from the people that work. You know, I was talking to a guy from Konami, and he's actually does PR for him, so he's not making them. And he was convinced. He's like, yeah, well, you know, we don't make PC games because, you know, if you sell 100,000 copies of it, that's considered a massive blockbuster. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? It was like, well, you know, I don't even need to talk about Warcraft with you. Let's just talk about like Battlefield, 2 weeks and a million, which are numbers which are more or less the same. I mean, that's the measure of success on console and likewise on PC. But it's just, I don't know if it's perception or what. They just think that, you know.
I think they're just focused on the Japanese market. I mean,
also, I mean, it'd just be interesting to see, I mean, to do it like some kind of research on. Because in the East in general, PC gaming is pretty big, but for whatever reason, it hasn't penetrated Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just did stories ourselves on China.
Right. It's huge in China.
Obviously,
Korea.
It's huge in Korea.
I think it's huge it's probably huge because of the gaming centers in some of those countries. I mean, go to like a game cafe or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, meanwhile, Sean, are you dying?
I warned you, I got the flu.
Yeah.
In Japan, and I shouldn't be contagious now, but I'm getting over
shouldn't
that.
Shouldn't be. So. That's great.
Just in case, can you lick the mic?
Yeah.
Could you just lick the mic anyway?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how much of it has to do with maybe some of our listeners that know more until we research it can write in and explain to us. But, I mean, obviously the conditions in which gaming arose differ vastly between, say, South Korea and Japan, where in Japan it was basically through, you know, arcade. It was introduced through the arcade games, and the big companies are still around, Namco and Taito and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it actually came into being in the PC format in Korea, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, there are certain dating simulators and stuff are really popular on PC in Japan, but really that's it. It's just not, you know, it's not looked upon as being the new.
Are those in the arcades too?
Dating simulators?
Yeah.
They might as well be. There's such random stuff in the arcade. I mean, it's all the stereotypes, you know, where you go and you just make a game out of anything.
Yeah. Train simulations.
There's
a
game, the train simulation. It has all the dials of like the JRs or the Japan Rail Train that you ride around every day there. And you basically just look. And of course, it's on the track. You know, it's not, you know.
It's a rail
train.
Shooter.
Except you don't shoot. It's like a rail game with rails, but nothing else to do.
You know, there's guys who would play that over here.
That's
hardcore train dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If only they had like the engineering hat peripheral.
Yeah, so there's pretty much anything.
I can't get past this whole renting dogs
thing. That part is rad. Yeah. Renting dogs.
The poor dogs. They need like a home. Yeah. They're like, is this my mommy now?
It's just the point when instead of just sitting in the little cage though in the pet store waiting for someone to come and adopt them, they spend that time of their life getting acclimated to walks and different people, I guess.
Other dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt kind of bad about looking at it. I think Melissa, a girlfriend, looked at it and she was like, I could tell she's not even a dog person, she's a cat person. I could tell she was thinking about it. I was like, we're not renting a dog. I don't care if we're in Tokyo, we're not renting a dog. But yeah, I'm trying to think if any other gaming stuff comes to mind. But no, I mean, just Rise of Legends and EverQuest 2 advertisements are.
Rise of Legends and EverQuest 2? Interesting.
Yeah, it's like, well, I don't want to say for Rise of Legends, but for EverQuest 2, if that's the big push there, it's like, well, no wonder PC gaming doesn't mean anything over there. But I mean, if that was it, you know, if that...
This podcast not brought to you by Sony Online.
It doesn't matter what the game was. If that was it, if there was one game pushing everything...
Right.
Wouldn't work.
Well, so we know what you were playing.
Yeah, we know what you've been playing, and my other stuff I've been playing will pretty much let you talk about what you're playing. Is this Company Heroes, like everyone?
Company Heroes,
Faces of War,
awesome. quite possibly my game of the year so far on PC.
It's a great, great
Company
game.
Company Heroes?
Yeah.
It's the good one.
Really, really digging it.
Hey, Jeff, how about you share your undocumented trick with the listening audience? The
I could do that. It's not that big a deal, but sure. well, especially if you're old like me, I discovered that, because I don't think it's in the documentation, but if you're playing Company of Heroes and you're, I think it's in any mode, single player, multiplayer, skirmish, you can actually hit the pause key on your keyboard and still issue commands with your units, which is awesome if you're a more turn-based guy like me. So, you know, I could actually select the units, tell them where to go, or even do build orders. Have that all paused, and then you just unpause it. It's kind of like the way like Baldur's Gate and all those RPGs played, you know, where you could just pause, you know, go into turn-based mode at any point. But I've just never seen that on an RTS. I could be wrong that there might be others before that have done that, but this is the first one I've seen. Anyway, I mean, that's just like one tiny detail of like everything that Relic did in this game that to me is awesome. The way they handled the resources. You know, the whole dirt farming aspect seems very fresh to me. The strategic point capture, the mix of units.
It's like a natural evolution of Dawn of War.
It is, yeah. It's like they took everything that they learned in Dawn of War and like refined it to a T.
You got to start playing multiplayer.
Yeah, I just didn't feel ready yet.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one thing I really dig though is like, you can command a couple units and like you just tell them to go down a road or something and just watching the AI take over.
Yes,
like,
the cover, the way they they divide and the cover. And also, I think Sean, maybe you mentioned this earlier, but the way that like the vehicular units, the way that like the utter devastation that like a tank will inflict on infantry is so much better than it used to be. I mean, was it you was talking about that like, you know, you can't take an infantry and shoot a tank repeatedly and have the tank up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
but you can if you've got recoilless rifles or
a Panzer Schreck or something.
But you've got to have them and you have to
upgrade.
Plan for it. Yeah,
right.
And that's actually kind of cool. It's like you can in each of the units in the environment, you can go around if there's a Panzer Schreck laying around, or an MG nest, you can just pick up and you know.
I love that too. Yeah, I've spent time with like some of the units. I'll just basically have them foraging, which mm-hmm. feels quote unquote realistic. You know, I mean. I know. Great game.
Yeah, it makes each squad feel more like a unit you want to like cultivate and keep, as opposed to just like disposable troops you can just order up another reinforcement batch.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it looks great. Like, when you hit like say a half track that's full of guys, and you hit it with an artillery shell or something, and everyone goes flying out of it. You know,
yeah,
thing flips over.
Oh, I love I love setting up traps for people. Have a couple cool. like artillery like things like offsite, and then mm-hmm. Panzer traps.
On the pathfinding, that's one of the few. The pathfinding is, I mean, it's phenomenal in the game compared to a lot of stuff. I mean, it's got issues. Like, if you've got a whole bunch of, you know, half-track vehicles, sometimes you'll see them start to do the Austin Powers maneuver.
Yep.
And I love this. I got to spread this, what I call the Austin Powers maneuver, because it applies to, like, pretty much every genre of game I play. But it basically goes back to that thing where he does that boneheaded maneuver where he's in the go-kart in the tunnel. And he's got to do a 180.
That's right.
But it's like a 100-point turn. Right. So it's like your catcher half-track's doing the Austin Powers trying to, like, go to the other base. And anyway, that's also, we start using that term in Battlefield 2 a lot of stuff, too. Even to the point where there's a trailer for the last Armored Fury expansion. I'm going to cough here. I'm going to try to hold off. And they're playing the majestic music, you know, the Battlefield music and stuff, getting everyone pumped up. But meanwhile, they airdrop a Jeep, and then the guys get in it and turn it around. But it's doing an Austin Powers. It's supposed to be like, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And it's like,
it's been Company Heroes for me and more WoW, trying to get up to 60. And I just got, thanks to you guys, a guitar and Guitar Hero 1. So I finished Guitar Hero on easy mode, and I'm on medium now.
Well, you have to get medium to unlock all the other
songs.
You're not
going
to
finish it on other modes. So.
I can tell you, I know already I'm not going to. Yeah.
And I know you play and stuff too. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, yeah, I played bass for years, but it's not, you know. I mean, on medium already, I'm like, on some of the songs. It's really fun, though.
Hard at anything.
However, I was really impossible. Deflated with this game, though. I can't. This guy ruined it for me before I even played it once, because I had to go. I took the guitar home with me that night from work, and I had to go straight to my daughter's back to school night. So I have a motorcycle, so I couldn't leave it on the bike. I didn't want it to get stolen, so I walked in.
Riding
this,
around on your bike
with a Guitar Hero.
He's kind of rock and roll.
Yeah, kind of rock and roll. But what was even worse was I was in this, you know, at this, you know, academic school walking around with this guitar, you know. I mean, it was in the box, but one of the dads who I'm friends with, who's, you know, not a gamer, though, he, like, saw this thing, and he was like, oh, is that, like, a Fisher-Price toy?
Yeah.
I'm like, no.
Like, when you press the whammy bar, and it goes...
Yeah, and he's like, well, it looks like a Fisher-Price toy. And I'm like, no, it's this PlayStation game where you, like... And I was, like, trying to explain the game, and he's like, oh, so you're just, like... pressing colored buttons to match the colors on screen, and he didn't know it at all. This is just what he was.
But that's what his reductive. Exactly right, though.
I know his reductive thing, which he didn't even know is exactly right. And then I just felt like a complete moron. It was like, shit. I'm going home to play my Fisher Price toy.
You didn't tell him it was your daughter's?
No, I didn't.
Oh, so you're pressing those buttons.
So now I'm at home, you know, and I'm playing Ace of Spades or whatever and feeling kind of cool, but then part of, but in my mind, but in my mind, I'm also hearing, oh, it's a Fisher-Price toy.
Well, did you think playing that crap that you were actually like,
no,
maybe a real guitar?
No, I did not think I was going to be a guitar hero.
Yeah.
No, I didn't, but you
can't, the moment you put that little thing around, I don't know, if you weigh more than a buck 50, as soon as you put that thing around your neck, you feel like a complete dude. Like you're wearing, it makes me feel like, I don't know why, but you know those shirts where it's like a t-shirt with like a tuxedo
on the front?
But I've seen ones where it's a guitar, where it's like a guitar around like the neck, but it's so to fit there, it's like really small. And then the kids that would wear them would like reach over to their own shirt and be like.
Right.
So I feel like I'm wearing.
I know, it's true, because the guitar goes like down like to my neck basically.
Yeah, you know, and you open the strap up and it's still.
Right.
You're looking like Buddy Holly backup.
Right.
I'm in the Beatles.
Yeah. It's a fun game, though. Yeah. There's something about it.
There's a reason you play it at home.
But I also noticed it in the manual. You know, they have how to play it with the PS2 controller, too.
Yeah,
so you really could just do it that way. And then, you know, again, that just shows, like, okay, all you're doing is... It's just, like, pattern recognition with
like
colors.
Rappa,
yeah, it's Simon Says, basically.
Yeah.
It is. Remember
better,
that?
Better
pass
songs,
around,
yeah.
Simon?
More timing.
It's got the four buttons on it, too, just like your Guitar Hero thing.
All right, I'm never playing it again.
All right.
Fine, I'll stick with the more sophisticated PC games.
like Faces of War with the rad line where, as your guys rush in, if they're not saying, do it for Uncle Sam, they say... Okay, no, mind you, these are American troops.
Was that Borat for a second?
No, yeah, but these are American troops that, okay, quick disclaimer, the game wasn't developed by English-speaking people.
It was developed by Best Way and originally published by 1C.
Okay,
where are they from? Out of, like, I want to say Czechoslovakia.
Okay, well, that would explain this line then. As we're charging in Operation Overlord, another thing one of my troopers says is, like, the newly notched notches on our M1 Garand says we are the hottest in the American Army.
What?
Or something like
that's
that.
That's how they talk.
It sounded like the innuendo was just so like, what the hell?
So that
game has got some pretty amazingly bad voice work. Not only that, the dialogue, it doesn't make any sense at all. And then it all just piles up. So like, say... You'll have a bunch of your guys yelling that kind of stuff. We are doing for Uncle Sam. And then, like, your commander will be, his face will appear on the bottom with a bunch of text, and then someone will read that. And then, meanwhile, someone just comes in and starts reading you, like, the entire history of the war, but with no punctuation. So imagine that, like, a Keegan book or something, take all the periods and commas out and just read that in the background as you're playing. It's like, you know, so the Allies tried to make their, you know, mark in Carentan, but met with this and this, and then that's just going on the entire time, not in between loading or anything.
Wow.
You see, that's kind of like, that's why I love those like Lost in Translation games. Like, it's almost like watching one of those like B movies that on Cinemax at like 3 a.m. you know is going to be bad, but you still love it.
Yeah, sometimes it's good. I can't say I wasn't laughing.
Speaking of Carentan, by the way, I don't ever need a D-Day mission ever again.
You just did one and loved it, though.
I didn't in Company of Heroes. I wanted that to be over.
Yeah, meanwhile,
I got to storm the freaking beaches again?
It's just a movement in tutorial.
It is a movement tutorial.
It was kind of funny. I remember like doing that mission. I just drag a big box across the entire screen. I said, okay, everyone just go to the beach.
Yeah, I did that too. Because they kept saying, okay, you know,
send five more. So I'm like, screw it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's what I did. Done. But I don't know. Just when the game opened and you're on the boat going towards the beach again, I was like, no.
Yeah.
Again?
If I see another Higgins boat, I swear to Christ.
over and over again.
Ryan, if I ask you what you're playing, are you going to go straight into your rant? Oh, Ryan has a rant ready.
We have a rant ready to roll.
Or are you playing something besides what you're going to rant about?
Well, what I'm playing, this actually leads into what I'm playing.
Okay.
There we go.
What I'm playing is a nice footnote to what I want to talk about here.
Okay.
He actually, for those playing at home, he actually has a full list of pros and cons on a printout.
I do. I'm very passionate. I'm very passionate about these games, though.
And I support you in that.
Yes. Agreed.
So, earlier this week, we all got a stack of Sierra Adventure Game collections. And for people who have never played these games, King's Quest, Space Quest, Police Quest, and Leisure Suit Larry, back during the late 80s, early 90s, these mm-hmm. were kind of the games that defined the adventure game market.
Very, very seminal games by some amazing game designers, including Roberta Williams, Al Lowe. It's sort of like the first generation of great...
Hey, let's not forget those two guys from Andromeda.
Right, guys from Andromeda. So some great early PC games, yeah.
Right, so these games, most of them were released back when DOS was the dominant operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to run these games now on modern operating systems, not the easiest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Sierra has released these four collections for these series, ostensibly with the full series on the discs, though that is not the case.
Yeah,
in most cases.
Advertising as, you know, finally runs on Windows XP.
Right. Right, I've got the King's Quest collection down here, too, as a prop here. And right at the very top, it says runs on Windows XP. In prominent.
You're setting us up for something.
Yep, he is. The rant's coming.
I feel like he's shaking his fist, ready for that right hook.
So, well, these collections were all announced. They were originally solicited on Amazon about a year ago.
Right.
Right. And
lots of anticipation.
And they kept getting pushed back. Mm-hmm. back. And they're finally, I think they're shipping to stores right now.
Mm-hmm. They're all $20.
They're all $20. They're all
$20 each. Yep.
Very budget.
Very cheap.
Budget products. Little flimsy boxes. Discs in paper sleeves. No mm-hmm. manuals.
Mm-hmm.
In PDF form.
In PDF.
That's actually part of my rant. But go on.
And if you read the fine print on the back of the boxes, you will find out that all of these games, the miraculous trick that Sierra has used to get them to run on Windows XP is just to use the DOSBox emulator, which everyone who cares about these games, that's what they've been doing anyway for like the past 4 years.
Right.
So this isn't actually anything new that applies to anyone who right. pays attention to these.
And I mean, but that's the case with any old game that runs in DOS, right? I mean, I could take any of my games that I have sitting around from the DOS era
and run them in DOSBox.
Yeah, basically, right. they just kind of optimized a front end and like made it so that anybody can do it without having to
know how to access DOSBox. Right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, who are they marketing these games to, though?
Well, considering for $20 budget titles, I think you're trying to just cater to like the Walmart crowd and get more people in on like... The trying to bring these classics back to front.
If you look at the box design, it totally has a Walmart kind of like...
It kind of does. Five full games.
Yeah.
I think this is...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that budget shovelware sort of look to
me,
it.
To me, when I see these boxes, I think they're not making them for us. They're kind of making them for other people to kind of like get them in on this stuff so that
right.
maybe they can bring back these series, which I hope is the case.
But what's weird is that these games are so old school and they're so from a distant time that like I can't imagine an unsuspecting Walmart person buying one of these and booting it up and thinking this was cool.
Right, exactly.
As good as these games are.
Can you still spank to Leisure Suit Larry?
Of course.
As usual, Sean cuts right to the chase. What's important here?
I'll do that for you,
Can I still play Leisure Suit Larry one-handed?
Right. Now with one-handed mouse control.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, if you've never heard of these games and you buy, say, like the King's Quest collection and you boot it up and you can get past the fact that you know, these are games from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're actually getting some really good games here. But
the thing is, you can go to, like, a Walmart, and, like, they sell these, like, bundled boxes of, like, you know, 20 games for a dollar mm-hmm. or whatever it is. And they look like total crap, and people mm-hmm. buy them because it's cheap.
Right. So I suppose maybe somebody would unsuspectingly buy these and find out that they're actually, you know, some masterpieces in here.
Yeah, that said, there's a lot of things they should have done to make it better.
Well, what disappointed me yesterday when these boxes showed up was to me, if you're going to take, well, they obviously, I was going to say take the time and money, they obviously didn't take any money to put these together. But what I would have liked to see instead would have been like a Criterion DVD sort of treatment here, mm-hmm. where they actually, you know, take King's Quest or Space Quest or Leisure Suit Larry, any of these old series, and say like, okay, this, you know, these games have been unplayable for a while now on this platform. We're going to update them for XP, and we're going to give them like the kind of respect and treatment they deserve. So here's like a jewel case to keep them in, for one thing, as opposed to just the frickin' paper sleeves.
Yeah. Here's an interview. Here's a DVD interview with Roberta Williams.
Right.
They had all of that stuff on the old collection.
Right. So do some behind the scenes stuff. And how about the original frickin' print manuals? In the games, in the case of King's Quest, you need the manuals to play the games. You know,
right? You got to enter like the second word from the fourth paragraph.
Right,
page
and
seven,
so you know, so there's a stupid, like paper printout that came in the box that says, "Oh, you're probably going to want to print out these manuals." You know, gee, thanks. How about if you printed them out for us?
It even says
I got to waste like 40 sheets of paper.
It even says
you were
on the requirements
cheap?
Printer.
Yeah, printer. to print out the freaking manuals.
Go to Kinko's.
Look at the box art for Larry. Pass this around. Look. Okay, the Larry art is standard clip art in the front, but in the background, looks like a taco shop mural or something. Look at it. It's not even the same artist. It's like a taqueria mural.
I just think
Te gusta, Larry.
You know, it's weird because you don't want to, on one hand, you don't want to complain. They like in King's Quest's case, you're getting seven games for $20, right?
Seven and it's
like,
games? Weren't there eight King's
so,
Quest
Well,
games?
There were eight, so you're not getting Mask of Eternity, but you're getting seven for $20. So you partially want to go, okay, thank you, Sierra, for making these available. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, you're Vivendi, which means Blizzard is contributing to your coffers there. So you've got some money. So how about spending a little of the, you know, billions of dollars of WoW money and giving these games some cool treatment? You know,
what is it? I mean, what about like the people that spearheaded that originally? Maybe they're in a different position in the company now. Maybe they left. I mean, maybe it's one of those things where it's like it ran out of steam because the people that were sort of like making it happen weren't in the same position or something. I don't know.
It could be. Whatever the case, I mean,
no idea why they were doing it.
They put it out at like budgetware shovelware prices, but it didn't need budgetware shovelware treatment. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's
I mean, I'm sure if we went to them and asked them, well, what's the logic? They would probably come back to us with, well, adventure games don't sell. Right?
They might, but then, you know, then don't bother at all. You know,
the thing is, like when these came in, you know, around the floor, outside of our staff were coming in and going, oh, you guys have like the Space Quest collection?
Yeah. That's a nostalgia spank for a lot of people.
But then when we opened the boxes, people were just like, oh.
And every time I've called like an EB.
No one laughed at that. A nostalgia spank. It's like breaking out your 83 Playboy or something.
All right.
You guys are just like, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it kind of is.
Too close to home.
Yeah, it was.
I'm clowning.
You're right.
I never played those. So.
And then like every time I've called an EB throughout the year to see if they were in when it got close to one of the slip shipping dates. Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, the guy on the other end of the phone would be like, wow, they're making these? Mm. So, I mean, people still remember these games.
You know, there's there's music CDs that I've bought like two or three times because they'll repackage it. Like, I have like, I think, three versions of Elvis Costello's My Aim Is True because it's sort of a scam, but they'll come out with like more bonus tracks or even like a new liner note essay might be enough if it's an artist that I really like. That I'll invest again.
You serious? A new liner notes essay?
Yeah.
That's if I'm hardcore about the person, I might.
Well, yeah. I do have three versions of.
So how many versions of Love Forever Changes do you have?
Just one.
Okay.
Well, just one. Like
nice though. Nice.
Criterion just came out with you know a new edition of Seven Samurai that had a lot more.
There you go. That's another one.
Same thing.
And I have the old Criterion Seven Samurai, but they made it appealing to me to buy the new one.
The Criterion comparison is interesting because like how many games out there do have Criterion editions?
Yeah. Not anymore. I mean, like look at the original releases of these games.
But they could, don't you think?
They could.
I think if they want to sell these things now, they could pretty easily. Just kind of
when
you know, actually, there was one thing, and it's really kind of niche. It was called Intellivision Lives.
Mm-hmm.
It was a collection of all these old Intellivision games, but you could also, like, it had a full documentation of the history of the company and, like, you know, the history of the console and interviews with the guys. And it felt like a whole all-in-one package. Mm-hmm.
You're talking about the came out for console, right?
No, it actually came out for the PC.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it was kind of like a cool soup to nuts thing. It was like a little slice of history.
Right. And then Midway Collections on Xbox had some of the similar features, too.
Right. Well, actually, they came out for the PC as well, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no. But yeah, I mean, that's exactly the case. Where, like, that was a Criterion treatment for classic games, and they could very easily put that together for these.
Even when these games originally came out, they used to have tons of, like, bells and whistles in the boxes,
right?
You know,
and that's what I would have expected out of this. You know, something. There was something about just seeing them in the, like, plain white sleeves that particularly rankled me. It was just like, man, you couldn't even come up with a frickin' jewel case? What do those cost? Half a cent to produce?
A single quick start guide piece of paper?
Right.
Well, the only thing I will say is that I was so desperate to play Space Quest VI, which I haven't been able to get working in DOSBox ever, that
that was
payment for me. Like, I was happy about mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, I don't want to completely, like, dump
I'm gonna
on them.
I'm going to have to try these and come back, because it's like, that's
yeah,
the
you
one.
Should.
I have a huge void in my PC gaming history in terms of these games. Mm-hmm. And I need to be the one to come back and say, if you know what, these were the golden days. Or do I need to come back and...
You probably won't.
Crazy.
I mean, they're pretty dated.
Right, and that's the one thing I find myself wondering is, if I go back and play Space Quest 1 or 2, will those jokes stand the test of time? And I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Space Quest is in the future, Darren.
We just created an alternate reality, though.
I mean, I do know that, like, I've replayed the old LucasArts game, adventure games, and to me, those hold up, even the ones with crappy graphics now, like Maniac Mansion mm-hmm. and Day of the Tentacle, because that kind of humor is pretty timeless, you know? It's like watching a, whatever, Seinfeld or I Love Lucy or Monty Python, where the jokes aren't topical, where it's just goofball humor.
Right.
So to me, the writing is so strong that it over, you know, it overshadows the 1980 graphics. I don't know if that's going to be the case in all these games. Maybe. You would be a good test subject, Sean.
I'm going to try it, and I should start with Leisure Suit Larry.
Right. Oh, God. Well, I don't think it even held up then.
You picked the version.
Okay, Ryan, you pick the best, quote-unquote, best Leisure Suit Larry, and yeah. Sean Elliott will play it.
On the next podcast, geez. I'll come back with my report. I'll take notes. I'll do, like, a review
this
of it.
This is going to be
this,
ugly.
On the back on the back of the
actually,
box.
This would be a funny story for, like, the...
I'll compare it to, like, some random... Any random, like, porno you can get, like, Colossal Combos Volume 27 or something, like, just...
Now that's the misconception about Leisure
Right,
Suit
it's not
Larry.
Porn, Sean.
It's okay. Softcore.
It's not even that.
No, it's like a...
It's like a Cinemax at
porn comedy or something. I don't know. It's not porn.
If that dude is
porn's not the right word.
Look at this. Pick up this box, then try picking up women.
That's
now playable on
and then try
PCs.
Going home alone.
Well, I'll compare it to the Little Superstar video then.
Look at
entertainment
this.
Per minute.
Now playable on today's PCs, including for the first time ever Windows XP.
Right.
Like, I had these.
Except for all the years you've been playing on DOSBox already.
Yeah.
Which is how you have to play it here.
And aren't there, like, fan-made remakes of a lot of these, at least the King's Quest games?
Yeah, and they're way better than these.
Yeah. We're not even through with what you're playing here, are we?
No.
We're not. Darren, what do you. And how. Let me interrupt just for a sec. I think we are going to do two podcasts this week, correct?
Yeah.
Just because we have so much to say. So we're going to be back on Friday again, but so maybe by then we'll be through with everybody's what you're playing.
We really need to get where we can get our own audio stuff in here, so we can bring in
the Skyping and the
because I mean we could
set that up.
Because this way, instead of having to describe, like, the sounds and Face of War and Call of Juarez and stuff, we'll just play them. Say, hey, check this
here
out, people.
You're right. We're still living in the Stone Age here in the podcast.
Hey, wait before.
Oh,
we go,
Ryan's
can
not.
Can I say,
done.
Oh, can I say what, just one more thing?
Go ahead.
Can I say this one, please, sir?
Okay. So anybody who's thinking about buying these Sierra collections, here's what you don't get in the boxes, right?
Okay.
With the King's Quest collection, you're not getting King's Quest 8. You're not getting the original version of King's Quest 1. And you're getting the crappy Windows version of King's Quest 7, which is still broken.
Awesome.
With Leisure Suit Larry, you're getting the disc version of Leisure Suit Larry 6, not the good CD-ROM version. And you're not getting Leisure Suit Larry 7 or any of the offshoot games that they made, like Larry's Casino. And,
okay.
And with Police Quest, you don't get either of the SWAT games. And with all of the collections, you don't get the originals of the first games in the series. You just get the enhanced remakes. So
okay.
these can't really be considered complete in any regard.
And isn't there one more series?
Space Quest?
Space Quest.
Actually,
Quest is the most complete.
They
out
did
of all
justice
of them.
To that one. That's and I to be honest with you, that was the only one I really cared about. That was my favorite series. So
and there's no Quest for Glory, no Gabriel Knight.
Mm-hmm.
No chance for you to make a cat hair mustache. Sorry, man.
I know. What's
so I'd say mixed review at best for the Sierra collections.
We'll get the Space Quest one if you want to get the classics.
Thank you for putting them out. Next time, try harder.
Mm-hmm.
Or try.
Now we have
or try, period.
It's time to cut to a word from our sponsor.
Oh, geez, that's right. We'll be right back.
Keeping us honest, Sean. Thank you.
Yeah.
Just Cause. Your world. Your rules. Your cause. Featuring 250,000 acres to explore, 303 missions to accomplish, 89 vehicles to command, 32 stunts to master. Just Cause, rated M for mature only from IDOS.
A full-blown drug war between two cartels.
In stores everywhere September 27th on the Xbox 360, Xbox, PS2, and PC.
Viva la revolución!
And we're back. Wasn't that a great ad?
That was fantastic. Let me just put the $20 in my pocket now. Thanks.
Thanks, Darren. That's great.
He still didn't even heard it.
We don't even know what it was. Yeah. But whatever it was, we thank them for sponsoring us, and I'm sure it's a great product. Darren.
Just hope it wasn't a Leisure Suit Larry ad.
Brought to you by Sierra's Adventure Games.
Wow.
Dow.
All right.
Nope. Darren?
Anyone else?
Wow. We're still in the what you playing. I'm so going to just blow through this quick. So
okay.
We've already talked a lot about 2142. I had a chance to finally get a chance to play, sit down and play it some more.
Can we talk more about that yet?
Okay. Well, I'll just
are we at the point where we can like say, because before we just...
It's like a final reviewable. I mean, like this is like...
Yeah, isn't even live yet, game?
It's gone gold. They have some test servers up right now.
Oh, I assumed it was been live for a while. No?
No. But I mean, like... My last few big... I was living
in the future, too.
Yeah. You were.
The one thing I always liked about like these futuristic games, I played a lot of Planetside back in the day, was controlling mechs and like vehicle controls. You're the ace air pilot from like Battlefield 2 and stuff, right? Uh-huh. Right, Sean? What's your thoughts, man? I mean, like, I found like while it's a
balls.
Little easier, there you go, done.
No, it's like I mean I could still like
the professional
kick
review
ass with the aircraft in the game.
It feels like they dumbed it down,
but
a little
everything's
bit with the
floaty. Everything feels like
exactly.
It's like cotton in cotton land. Like you're like a piece of molasses in a big. A pile of cotton,
and I really don't like the big thing I'm making a big deal about is the mechs, and I really don't like how they control.
It feels like crap, yeah.
It feels like a real.
The hover tanks are garbage compared to the. They actually have like standard track tanks in there.
Yeah,
the track tanks, like and this is like a point of contention I had before, bitching about all this futuristic stuff, and about half the time they're reinventing wheels, like inferior wheels,
Yeah,
and it's like the regular tanks in the game are so much better than the stupid hover tanks, where you have to turn the whole body around to like traverse the turret and everything, and then the mech is just like this slow like clomp clomp clomp, just what you're thinking, but it gets stuck in stuff, it's like hard to tell your orientation next to things.
You use that Austin Powers turn.
Yeah, Austin Powers turn in the mech. Yeah,
the only way you could tell orientation in the mech is they have this little kind of a faint arrow on the screen kind of point. Mm. It gives you the orientation of the front of your legs,
right? And then down on the bottom there's the little
exactly it doesn't really help.
But it's just, I just don't like the way the stuff feels. I mean, like the hovercraft vehicle in the air, it's not as satisfying as jets, it's not as satisfying as a helicopter. It's just like some weird thing in between. And they want to like correct themselves and float and stuff. Mm-hmm. They got more lock on missiles, which are, never that exciting as opposed to
it seems to me
satisfaction of leading someone and figuring it, working it out yourself, intuiting it, and then getting the kill from it.
It seems to me it was more like a concession for people who weren't able to fly them in the past, because I know that like I'm a dumbass. I would crash the things as soon as I got off the ground. Mm-hmm. So I kind of assume like the fact that I kept it in the air longer this time means that
they're there with that. And I don't know if that's not such a big thing. I mean, it is attractive to me that like not everyone can fly. I mean, like in Battlefield now, at this point, everyone that's still playing can fly. Mm-hmm. But at least when they come out, I mean, it's pretty gratifying to be mm-hmm. to be able to put some invest some time into it, uh-huh. master it, and then get it. But I don't think that's what's killing it for me, because it's like the vehicles in Enemy Territory Quake Wars are very similar. They're made to be accessible.
Right.
They're very stable. And but I had a lot better time with those, and I think it's because of that feel. Again, you feel, even though they are anti-grav things, you feel as though they are working against gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the intuitive physics of it. It doesn't feel like it's just floating around like a no-clip mode or something. You know, you feel like if such a technology did exist, this is probably how it would feel to operate it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I don't get any of that in 2142. It just is kind of like I said, it's like no-clip. You just imagine, you just draw a box around a no-clip thing, and then just there you are, and you, whatever vehicle you are, that's kind of how it is.
And the buggies felt like I was driving a bar of soap, just kind of slipping around the environment.
You put all that together, and it's like the shooting, the infantry combat sucks for me. It doesn't feel satisfying. Like, you're hit, you know, it's like, it's inaccurate as always. The vehicles, when you hit stuff, and I don't know, I mean, little things are what, but it just doesn't feel, nothing feels like you're really blowing anything up. I mean, it's all such an abstract environment. It's just a bunch of purple cubes and stuff. You know, it's just a few steps up from Tron for me, you know? Like,
dude, don't insult Tron, man. That's fucking good.
Where it's just, you know, I mean, it doesn't have any of that physicality or anything that I want in that kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, to add, you know, more and more things. I think fundamentally that's the big thing, is that it just, nothing feels satisfying. It's not like you can go, okay, well, you know, maybe the aircraft sucks, but sniping is just kick ass, you know, and then, well, yeah, sniping sucks. Maybe it's just awesome to, you know, use a tank or something, and that's not really fun. And I'm not really finding any, you know, one thing that's especially satisfying. It's all just kind of there. So not only does it, you know, it looks, plays like a mod, like we were saying, and the main mode is what is really not working for me. It's like, originally they proposed the whole Titan mode thing as a way of sort of structuring gameplay, so that instead of having, you know, whatever, you have like 5 capture points on the map, and no one is really keyed into the strategic value of any one. If in a public server, you know, say for example in Battlefield 2, Shark Guy, the TV station is hands down the most essential base to have, and a lot of times public players won't go to it. They'll just be out other places while they're losing their one most important asset. So in this game, they're like, look, everyone, it's this big flying thing in the sky.
Uh-huh.
Nothing else. But then, so basically what they want to do is make you, you know, you do all things in a certain order. You capture the bases in the field that shoot missiles and take the shield off of the Titan, and then you go on the Titan and blow that up by destroying the consoles inside of it. But what happens is you're assuming all this level of coordination in public players that just hasn't been happening in the beta at all. No one...
It never happens in any game.
Right, and so once you get in the base, no one... I mean, it's really easy to defend them when you're there, because
mm-hmm. narrow,
you
know,
you
hallways,
just spam grenades in the narrow hallways and stuff. You use C4 traps and all this mm-hmm. stuff. You use mines.
And by the way,
all this stuff that they're bragging about that makes the game cool, you know, the drones and all this kind of crap, just make the damn thing impregnable once you're in there. But then because of it, too, is what happened next is that it was like they saw, you know, if we do it this way, these Titans are never going to get blown up. So then they started making it so that the regular missiles at the capture points in the field will continue to fire and hit the Titan and destroy the Titan after the shields are down, so that you can now destroy a Titan without ever setting foot on it. And mm-hmm. it's kind of like a weird concession, because it's like, you know, well, yeah, we had those big ambitions for it, and they kind of just don't work. So it's now just going to be... But so what happens is it's back to the same old thing. It's just, if you control the most points, you win.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And other stuff's there. But I don't know. It's just some cool ideas, but nothing is just really satisfying so far.
Right on. Next thing I was just going to say, Sam and Max, I had a chance to sit down and play part of episode 1.
Cool.
And the best...
Oh, that's out?
No, not yet. We're getting review copies soon. And the biggest compliment I could pay to the Telltale guys is I played through like the opening part in the office, and I said, I want to stop right now and just save the rest of the experience for when the game comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's true to the characters. I mean, obviously it's the original team pretty much mm-hmm. that's making mm-hmm. this game. It has the humor and the vibe. The one thing that just kind of, like, by the nature of the fact that it's episodic and they're kind of pushing this thing together. If you remember, if you downloaded the old trailers for what the canceled Freelance Police game,
mm-hmm.
you could tell that game had a lot more, like, you know, a lot more happening in the environments. And there's only so mm-hmm. much you can put into the levels,
right.
But it still looked really cool and made me laugh a couple times just in that opening sequence. Uh-huh. So
the episodic nature is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out here, because these episodes are like a couple hours.
Yeah, they're saying like 3-4 hours, but I think like the big hook that they're trying to like angle is you or Snare. They're trying to like basically get people to go to GameTap, because you pay mm-hmm. the monthly fee and you get all the games plus Sam & Max.
Right.
How much is that monthly fee, though?
I think it's like $10 a month or something.
$9.99, I think. Sorry. I think.
Yeah,
which includes Sam & Max?
Which includes Sam & Max and all their other stuff. And they're actually picking up The missed Uru game, the online Uru game.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting to see how that's going to work.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even though, like you're saying, it's a much better value, and you're like, hey, I think for me, it was like on some weird level, I was already thinking, like, well, what if I just want to get this game? I don't want all this other stuff. But even though it's like,
but you know what?
The logic of it is like, well, yeah, you'd pay the same price just for the game. We're giving you all this other stuff.
You know, that's just
how it works.
You know what I was thinking of, though? Is like, think of it like, you know, okay, it's owned by Turner, so they probably have this kind of TV channel mentality, which is just kind of true. Mm-hmm. And then you think of it like, okay, so you have HBO where you watch movies, and but you're also getting The Sopranos and, you know, all these other TV shows.
Right. I think it's the notion of a subscription and knowing, like, how difficult it can be to cancel these at times.
Yeah.
You know, and they rely on that difficulty and on your sort of
your laziness.
You subscribe, as opposed to pay to play.
We'll renew it automatically until you can't.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But if they add enough premium content to it, you know, stuff that makes it worth me coming back every month, I'd be okay with that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just like, I hear what Sean's saying, though. It's like an extra string attached if you just want Sam and Max.
Right. Because I'm thinking of like, yeah, what if you just wanted to try the first one? You're like, let me just get this.
Well, they are talking about like basically they're doing it like seasons. So like what they're gonna, like, they've talked about, like, they're gonna have like a box set when you're done where you can just buy the entire set and there you go. You have a full game.
That's good. So some people might just want to wait.
Won't the single episodes be available on Telltale's site?
Possibly. I'm not 100% sure.
I know playing the first Bone episode, which I liked quite a bit. I played it with my daughter and we're both fans of the comic book, but you know, there was something, you know, just inherently not unsatisfying, but it's just frustrating when a game is that short. And even knowing it's just an episode and that there's going to be more, it's like by the time you're into the rhythm of playing it, now it's over.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the trick of having the episodic pace. I mean, when's the right amount of time between episodes?
Yeah. You're still targeting a month between them, right?
Yeah. Well, the idea
another thing would be like, if I get GameTap and I have this monthly subscription, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, oh, what if they like don't hit every month, and then I have this GameTap subscription, and it's every 2 months, and then I'm really paying $20 per episode. If that's the only thing.
Good point. Yeah. If they delay it a month, and you're paying your $10 a month, and there's nothing else there that month that you're interested in. Yeah.
Right. Well, from every indication, when I've talked to them, it sounds like they're on track, and also to keep their kind of interest going, they're going to have these interstitials, kind of like little promotional shorts every week before, you know, up until the next episode comes out.
That's cool. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
So like little animations.
Yeah. Like little like machinima clips, whatever.
Seems like a good format for portable systems.
True. Play them on the bus or something.
Because then, like, a three-hour game session on a portable all of a sudden seems a lot, you know.
A lot more doable for, like, a knock that out.
Right.
Flight to Edmonton.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Malloy?
You probably know the answer already.
Yeah, I know what you're playing.
Yeah, World of Warcraft. Still.
You're still
our
hardcore.
Our guild down Nefarian. So, anyone listening?
Awesome.
You know what that means.
Congratulations.
Everyone else, I apologize.
What about
Sean and I saw the WoW trading card game yesterday, and Darren too, actually, and it looked pretty good. I thought. Cool.
Are you gonna get back? Are you gonna go back into the trading card game?
God,
now?
I don't know.
That stuff's dangerous for me.
I've tried to lose all those aspects of my life now that I'm the age I am. So I stopped with comic books and all that stuff. Trading card games are, you know, they can be awesome, but the money sink there is just brutal. And they have some really nice incentives to keep you buying cards there for WoW players.
Well, what are they going to do? Like, you get mounts and stuff, or
there's three
rare cards you could get randomly in any package that you can turn them into this NPC, this goblin. I can't remember what this faction was called. It's like goblin gambling or something.
Yeah,
like that.
In the actual game.
In the actual game. So if you invest in the trading card game, the booster packs there's going to be three rare cards that you could get that you could then redeem online to get special stuff in the game.
I think the most common.
People aren't going to be crying foul about this.
They already know about it.
They know about it. It's all cosmetic. You know, there's nothing that actually boosts your stats.
That's what I was going to ask.
Right.
Yeah.
But like the most common rare card is like some tabard.
Right.
Basically a shirt you wear.
And then,
and I think the second one was the hippogriff.
Yeah,
maybe?
It's a baby hippogriff pet, which is basically like the baby murloc that they gave out at BlizzCon.
And people freak out about pets. There are people who collect these little. All they do is they're these little tiny things that follow you around, and people go, "Oh, how cute!"
Yeah, they don't do anything in game. They do nothing except follow you around. I mean, I have a baby murloc, but every time I bring him out, I get a comment every time.
Badge of chodeness.
People are just, "Oh, I want a baby murloc."
Yeah. So especially the rare ones, people freak out over.
Yeah.
And then the last one, the most rare, is a turtle mount with that. Doesn't increase your speed at all. Most mounts you get increase your speed.
Well, it is a turtle.
But, yeah, exactly. But
right.
characters under level 40 can also use it.
So that's the big hook there.
What about integrating like the play into the game, where like you can play a virtual version of it in World of Warcraft with other people in there, and then maybe that will reflect the physical cards you have.
That's a cool idea.
That's pretty meta, man. I don't know.
Final Fantasy has a built-in kind of card.
Yeah.
Game. Final Fantasy XI.
Right, right. That's off on the side, though. Does that actually, like, impact the game itself? Or is that just kind of like a little...
I think it's more of a side thing.
That's what I thought it was.
I was actually really impressed by the trading card game itself. It's Upper Deck who makes it, and they came in and they taught us the rules, and we played a game. And I thought it did a really nice job of, you know, it's kind of your basic Magic the Gathering model, mm-hmm. where you have a certain amount of points, you know, each side has a certain amount of points. You got to whittle it down to zero. So that basic thing is there. But they did, I thought, a really cool job of integrating the classes and not really the races yet, but the classes, the abilities, the weapons, all that stuff is straight out of WoW.
Oh, yeah, it definitely had the flavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like you get one hero character, and you can equip them with all the weapons you know, and there's all the quests are from the game.
Right, right. So, instead of lands and magic, you have quests, and the quests are straight out of WoW.
Right. And the abilities that you get when you use them, they behave pretty much like they do in the MMO, like cleave, you know, mm-hmm. hits two allies instead of just, mm-hmm. like, the main character. So,
do they leave us any decks or anything?
No.
I'm sure they'll probably send some along later
later. I think I was going to post on my blog some. We have some JPEGs of the cards. I think if anybody's actually interested, they could go check out my blog. But did the turtle mount appeal to you? Did that make you want to buy booster packs?
Oh yeah, I already pre-ordered stuff before I even saw it.
Well, I got to tell you, are you serious?
You pre-ordered these cards?
Yep. He's hardcore in the WoW.
The problem, Keith and I,
we
feed off each other when this kind of stuff comes out, because we have a ton of Magic cards and we have a ton of those stupid hero clicks.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, okay, no more of these.
Right.
And then
so you're freaking out that Mage Knight's coming out?
Well, I don't really, Mage Knight, whatever. But we're just like, would you play the wild card game? And I'm like, I don't know, would you play the wild card game?
And then something to be said for living with a non-gamer.
Yeah,
it keeps you honest.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
If I see you fools playing that at lunch,
it's all over.
A couple rounds.
You're
going to
break up
poker.
With us?
You know what would be cool is, like, they did bring this back to Japan. They had these card arcade games there where it's like a hybrid of a card game and a video game. So I was wondering, like, if they could do more to implement it into the, like, the real World of Warcraft. Where did Warcraft?
How does that work?
There's like a table, like one of them, say, would be soccer, right?
Okay.
And you have like eight of them all connected. Everyone's playing, or more than that, or whatever.
Are you thinking kind of like instead of like an auction house, everyone kind of sits around in a gambling parlor and kind of throws down the cards?
Right. They're sitting there, and it's a video game screen.
Okay.
And then there's a video game screen on the bottom. Then you set your cards on them. So you set your players, like, say, if it was like a Donruss, like, football card, you know, soccer card. You set your guys up like they wouldn't a team, and then it reads stats from the card or something.
Huh.
And you locate, you move them around, and it's like, it's just this.
That's
weird,
interesting.
That was the big hype there. That's the stuff that everyone's playing in every arcade there.
I liked the trading card, the WoW game yesterday, the raid pack the raid game they showed.
Mm-hmm.
They have an Onyxia game where
card raiding,
card raids,
where one person is essentially like it's like a dungeon master sort of, and three players are playing against that one person who is playing as the big dragon.
Wow, I remember when that
you
was called D&D.
You get to be Onyxia?
Yes, you do.
In the card game.
Is there a dives card?
Is there a dice card?
Oh, actually,
there is a Leroy Jenkins card.
Oh, there is.
Really? Drawn by the Penny Arcade guys.
You got to play the Leroy card.
Yeah, right. Made by the Penny Arcade guys. Yeah.
What does the card do? Do they?
They said it does. It does have an ability.
It
wipes your raid.
Foils your raid, basically. I think.
Yeah. No, he did. They get an ability.
Wow.
The dives card gives you plus 50 dots.
more dots.
There should be a dives card, shouldn't there?
Yeah. I think in the scheme of things, he's probably better than Leroy. Just because the Leroy thing was a stunt. And
right.
I think this guy's just like a genuine tool. He's been a tool for a long time.
Yep.
Yeah. Where are we at on time? Are we almost, out of time?
7 minutes.
We have 7 minutes.
No, 57 minutes is how long we've been.
Oh, 57 minutes.
So we're getting kind of close.
Okay.
What we got
to get kicked out of here in about
5 minutes.
5 minutes, I think.
Let's wrap it up.
So we'll wrap it up. We'll be back. Oh,
can I slip in one news story?
Yes. Oh, yeah, you may, Darren. Go
Thank
ahead.
Thank you. Please. I'm only slipping in this one because news. I want to make sure this gets out before X06. Because Rumor Patrol. So last week, last time we recorded, we talked about Halo Gen, the RTS Halo tribute, which was coming out for CNC Generals, which was canceled. So I did a little digging, and I was kind of curious about what the story was behind it. Because, you know, think about it, Bungie was behind the Myth series. Mm-hmm. You know, tactical. Was it a
classic RTS?
Classic RTS.
It was tactical, yeah.
So anyway, I was asking around what the deal was, and I have some pretty good sources who are telling me that at X06, Bungie is going to announce that they have a group working on an RTS Halo game. The hook is that it's coming out for the 360, from what I'm hearing from some people.
You mean 360 only?
360, well, possibly only. What I'm hoping is that it's just not announced for the PC and it's coming because it only makes sense. I mean, I just remember going to all these meetings where they talk about how the future is great, the PC is going to work in conjunction with the 360, and the guy playing the RTS on the PC is going to be able to communicate with the guy playing a first-person shooter experience or whatever on the consoles. I mean, what better way to do it than have a Halo RTS game commander telling some dude in Halo 3 to go overtake the hill or something?
So what you're saying is that the Halo RTS would make a great Games for Windows.
It sure would. And I sure hope that they're going to be announcing that at some point. I mean, alternatively, I mean, it could be something that they are doing. I mean, like Shadowrun's kind of bridging that gap.
Mm-hmm.
So I can only hope that it's going to be announced fully, and if not, I'm going to start a damn petition because I want to see that game on Windows.
I think that's fair, and I don't know who better to start a petition for a Halo RTS than the official Games for Windows magazine.
And there you have it.
We also mentioned too, after we were sort of ripping on Bungie for giving the cease and desist and shutting down Halogen, it turned out that they actually gave them job offers. And
that is that right?
Down work.
Yeah, actually, I'd heard about that, so I was going to add that too. But thank you.
So, very cool. Right. So they shut Halogen down, right. But then gave them jobs
in their office.
To work on this game, right?
Is it their Austin offices, right?
I don't know.
Whatever, something like that.
So that's a nice happy ending.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see that all that hard work, you know, come out in the end.
Mm-hmm. On the PC.
On the PC.
So I don't know, though. I wouldn't.
I'm not going to hold my breath, but
Since they're insisting on differentiating the platforms. And
they definitely seem to be, you know, Halo seems to be the 360 Xbox game, right? I mean, it doesn't seem to be the PC game.
But it would be a great idea, though,
to spread the franchise. I mean,
yeah, like if you did want to do that and create the two as being alike but different, then if you made it like a killer, you know, RTS, Halo, or whatever for PC.
It's true. I mean, and like Darren said, Myth was an outstanding RTS series for the PC. So we know Bungie can do it.
So again, this is all rumor and speculation, but from some pretty good sources. So hopefully they'll confirm it this week. Is it this week? X06?
Yes.
Yes.
In Barcelona.
That's what I thought.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess we'll be back later this week. Hopefully, I assume we will.
Yeah, we definitely got to squeeze
more exciting news. Nah, not really. Not exciting. we'll just talk about the leftovers. Yeah. And we'll maybe talk a little bit about making our first GFW magazine, huh?
Yeah. And I'm going to play some Leisure Suit Larry. And I want to play, I want to challenge you guys to some Company Heroes.
I'm in.
Since I'm the desert, since okay. I was the non-RTS guy.
You got to go easy on us, though.
I want to show you how I play now.
Also, we need to come up with
slow roll.
We need to come up with names for for our new podcast when we do have to change names. So maybe if anybody has any ideas, post on the message board.
Oh God, I can hardly wait for those suggestions.
Well, I did like somebody one of our loyal readers. Podcast for Windows. I like. I liked a lot.
MS Cast.
Yeah.
Blue screen of death.
Oh, there you go.
Three finger salute.
What's up with people calling it Vista?
Vista. Sir.
Vista. Well, everyone, that's Windows Vista. A lot of people say that, but I'm like
Vista.
Yeah.
Instead of Vista.
I don't know.
I never heard anyone saying
they throw that Latin.
Yeah, who says that except you? I hear
Shane
Untelemundo
from EGM does.
Oh yeah.
I think I've heard Sean Malloy call
Shane
that.
Shane just mocking.
Called it Vista.
Windows Vista.
I think Shane's just doing it to mock us.
No.
Yeah, because he's way too cool. Whatever.
To cruise the Vistas.
All right. Well, we're out for now. We'll be back later this week. Happy gaming to everybody.
Word.
Goodbye.